It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. On Friday, a Waukesha County judge ordered the State Elections Commission to verify the citizenship status of all Wisconsin voters and to make a plan to have this done in time for the next statewide election in February.
The circuit court judge ruled in favor of a Pewaukee resident who filed a lawsuit against the Wisconsin Elections Commission and the Department of Transportation last year. They claim the state is violating their voting rights by not verifying the citizenship of the millions of registered voters in Wisconsin.
Now, yesterday, the judge stayed part of his ruling while the case is appealed by the state's Justice Department. For a look at the case and implications of the ruling, we're joined by WPR Politics reporter Rich Kramer. Rich, welcome back.
Good to be back.
Well, lay the groundwork here. What does current state law say about proof of citizenship when it comes to voting?
So Wisconsin requires that people who register to vote attest under the threat of pretty significant criminal penalties that they are U.S. citizens and eligible to vote, but they don't have to present proof. You do have to be a citizen to vote, but if a non-citizen is caught voting in an election, they face a felony charge and maximum penalties of 3.5 years in prison and up to a $10,000 fine.
Now, take us to this ruling and an update here. This Waukesha judge put on hold part of his ruling. Tell us what's moving forward here and what is on hold.
Okay, so a lot happened yesterday. The part of the ruling that wasn't paused includes the Waukesha County judge finding that the Elections Commission and the DOT, but the Elections Commission has a duty under the law to verify U.S. citizenship for every person on the voter roll. So we're talking, you know, millions of people. And also they have to verify citizenship of anyone who is registering to vote. So that's essentially the judge saying, here is what I found. That was in response to the question raised in the lawsuit by the Pewaukee resident. There is also a directive in that ruling that hasn't been paused that requires the Elections Commission to kind of figure out how to verify it. And the judge said, you know, use DOT data or whatever else is needed to check the citizenship of those millions of people and any new applicant.
So, go ahead.
I'm sorry, but the part that was stayed, that was paused.
Put on hold.
Yeah, the Department of Justice asked the judge to pause a requirement that no new voters can be registered by the Elections Commission unless that citizenship is verified. So the judge did agree, and that part of the order is on hold for now.
So for the Wisconsin Elections Commission to cross-check its data with the Department of Transportation, how much would this change voter registration, the system that works here in Wisconsin, you know, the system that is currently in motion?
It would be a really big change. And in legal filings, the commission said that it would take months and months to figure this out. They'd have to develop a system. They'd have to test it. And we do have an election coming up, you know, in February and also an April election, et cetera. So it would be a big change for them. And that's part of the reason why they are asking the judge to stay his entire ruling. He hasn't decided whether to do that yet, but that is what they're asking.
I learned through your reporting as well, in order to take this action, the online voter registration system would have to have some downtime. Can you explain that?
Yeah, that's part of the ruling that was stayed. So on Friday, the judge said, essentially, you have to stop registering new people unless you can verify that citizenship. And because there's not a process yet, that is why the Elections Commission is saying they'd have to disable their electronic registration system. And they said that by itself, you know, pausing the use of that electronic system would violate state law that explicitly orders them to have a online registration system. So that's part of the rub here. And the Elections Commission just said it would be a ton of work and they'd have to hold off on doing anything while they figure out how to respond or how to achieve what the judge ordered.
Okay, so meanwhile, timeline here, there's another hearing on the 31st. What are the next steps here?
So I would say that the next step is the Department of Justice, which is representing the Elections Commission and the DOT. They're definitely going to appeal this case to a state appeals court. I haven't checked this morning to see whether that appeal has been filed, but the motion filed by the DOJ yesterday is essentially saying it's coming. So that's why we want you to hold off, so we don't have to make any rushed changes while this goes through the higher courts. You know, in theory, this could go up to the state Supreme Court.
Rich, thank you so much for the update. Thanks for your reporting.
Thank you.
That is WPR Politics reporter Rich Kramer. He joined us for a look at the lawsuit against the Wisconsin Elections Commission that would require the agency to verify the citizenship of all Wisconsin voters. Now we're joined by an elections clerk to talk about this ruling and the impact it could have on election officials on the ground. Scott McDonnell is the Dane County clerk. Scott, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Let's talk about verifying and registering voters. How do election clerks currently verify whether someone is eligible to vote?
Yeah, well, on the application, the first box you check says, "Are you a citizen of the United States?" And if you can't check that box, you can't register to vote. And when you sign that form, it says again, you could be subject to fine or imprisonment under state and federal laws. So one of the main checks on this situation is the threat of a felony. Also, you have to show an ID to vote. So when you're registering or when you're voting, you have to show an ID. Wisconsin does not issue driver's licenses or IDs to folks who are not here legally. They used to a long time ago. They don't now. So that's another kind of check on the system. And then the voter database is public to anyone. You can download it, anyone can, and check those names. And the federal government could do that. They could download this and check to see if the folks who are there are here legally. That's why you haven't really seen this as an issue, because this is pretty transparent, and it would be very obvious if someone were voting who shouldn't be voting. And that's not just people who are not legally. It's 17-year-olds. It's people who have felonies. It's not just one group, and that data is public.
With that said, how unlikely or likely is it for non-citizens to vote in Wisconsin elections?
I mean, it is no study has shown that this happens in any numbers anywhere. And if you think about it, you could the what you're exposing yourself to, not only a felony, and people have been sent to prison for years over voting when they should illegally. Deportation, I mean, all sorts of sanctions for just casting one ballot. So that's why no study has shown this to happen, and no one has found it. If you remember during the Scott Walker recall, all of those signatures were posted to the web. People were going through it and saying, "Oh, look, this person's a teacher, this person's a judge." The extreme that goes on now, people are doing that. They're just not finding names to say, "Look, here's an illegal voter. Let's send it to the district attorney."
So, with this ruling, what type of effort would it be for the Elections Commission to carry out a new verification system by the spring primary election in February?
I don't think it's possible at all. I mean, one of the things you have to understand is that Wisconsin, Minnesota, a couple other states were exempt from the original voter law, which said you have to sync up your voter database with your driver's license database so that people can register when they get their driver's license or renew their driver's license. We have same-day voter registration. And so in that law, that exempted us because it is easy to register to vote in Wisconsin. You can just walk in on election day and register to vote. So because we have that, we have never synced up those databases. Neither has Minnesota. It would be a huge, I would say, multi-year project to rebuild the whole system and do that. And then we're checking against what? I mean, I think we could, there isn't a federal database we can access. So, yeah, this isn't even really possible.
How might this ruling affect election clerks on the ground, as they do their work?
Well, I do think it was important that the judge stayed the part of his ruling that said people can still register to vote right now. I think that was important. You can't disenfranchise people for something you can't even prove is happening in any numbers. So for the short term, this won't have an effect on us. I will say I struggle to see how this survives an appeal process to the state Supreme Court. States are allowed to have different laws. Some states have same-day voter registration, others do not. Arizona tried to do this checking for citizenship. They can do that if they pass a law. So the Constitution delegates this to the states. So I just don't see how this survives the appeal process.
As you look at this case, what are you watching for as a clerk, as you know, what's to come?
Yeah, I don't think, honestly, don't think much is going to change. I never really understood why you don't just audit these elections after the fact and say, let's go through it. I mean, if you have time, DOT could go through and see anybody who's been issued an ID. For example, you can get a driver's license if you're legally in the United States, you're traveling or whatever. But there's only a few thousand of those. You can check all those records and see. There could be an after-election process that could be, more thorough. We could do that right now, but
A
so it's
more
a little frustrating.
stringent,
It's frustrating.
a more stringent auditing process after elections could be one viable option, you're saying.
That we can do right now. You don't need to change state law. You don't need to have a court ruling. And I think it would instill confidence in the fact that our voter rolls are solid.
Scott, thank you for your time.
Well, thanks for having me, Kate.
Scott McDonald is Dane County Clerk. He joined us to talk about this lawsuit against the Wisconsin Elections Commission that would require the agency to verify the citizenship of Wisconsin voters and how the recent ruling might affect the work of election officials around the state. And earlier, we heard the latest from WPR politics reporter Rich Kramer on the developments with this case.
Coming up, 1 in 5 medical emergency calls in Wisconsin are related to falls, mostly at home. We'll check out efforts to prevent injuries and deaths from falling.
What we hear a lot from older adults that they think that falls are kind of just inevitable as we age, but there's so many different things that we can do to prevent those falls.
That's next here on WPR News.
It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. One out of every 5 calls to emergency medical services in Wisconsin are due to fall-related injuries.
That's according to a new report from the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
For older adults, falls can sometimes be debilitating. Even recovery from a fall can be extremely painful, and concussions can cause cognitive and memory problems.
Falls can also be life-threatening. CDC data shows Wisconsin has the highest fall death rate among older adults in the U.S. But the good news here is that fall-related injuries are very preventable.
Suzanne Morley is the Health Promotion Program Coordinator at the Wisconsin Institute for Healthy Aging. She's coordinator for the statewide Falls-Free Wisconsin Coalition. And William Kane is a preparedness and emergency healthcare epidemiologist for the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. He's the co-chair of the Falls Free Wisconsin Coalition's data work group. Will, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
And Suzanne, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Suzanne, people hear falls and they might not think it sounds like a very serious thing. Can you talk about some of the risks associated with fall-related injuries, especially for seniors in Wisconsin?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's kind of exactly what you said. We might not think of all the negative ramifications that can happen after someone falls, especially as we get older. You know, we're more likely to maybe have an injury that can make us potentially lose our independence or even put us in the emergency department or hospitalization. We could break a bone, maybe have a concussion, traumatic brain injury. And lots of different things like that. But there's many, many things that we can do to prevent falls.
And we'll spend some time on prevention in just a bit. But with the scope of the problem, Will, I knew falls were a problem here in the state. But this new report that you and your colleagues put out, give us a sense of the scope of how widespread falls are and how much of a EMS response we have.
Yeah. Falls are one of the most common calls that EMS responds to in Wisconsin. And EMS here responds to about 140,000 falls each year. The number of falls are definitely growing, and it is a major health issue for Wisconsinites, especially older Wisconsinites. Wisconsin actually has the highest fall death rate among older adults of any states in the U.S. And in addition to the injuries and the loss of life that occurs because of these falls, it also strains our EMS and our healthcare system.
Will, staying with you for a moment, higher rates of falls and death rates from falls in Wisconsin than the rest of the country, as you said, and we have an aging population. This problem probably, unless we take steps, Will, is going to get worse before it gets better. What do you watch for from year to year as you look at these trends?
Yeah, so we really are keeping an eye on what's happening with the number of fall calls to EMS, as well as the number of falls that we see at our emergency departments in Wisconsin. There are some opportunities for interventions. You know, when people are transported to the hospital, they may be linked up with different sorts of resources there to help prevent falls in the future. But for some folks, they either they aren't transported because they don't require transport to the emergency department, or they don't want to be transported. And in these cases, it's harder for us to link individuals with fall prevention resources to get them the things that they need, whether it's healthcare or social services. And it's really important for EMS and our community and government organizations to work together to reach out to these people especially.
Suzanne, a mystery to me anyway is, why does Wisconsin stand out when it comes to falls?
Yeah, that's a great question and something that we've been asked quite a bit since we've been doing this falls prevention work with the Falls Free Wisconsin Coalition. Often we get the question, is it because of the snow and ice in the winter? Is it due to Wisconsin's drinking culture? You know, why is it? And you know, there's not a great answer for that. We have done some digging into the data related to alcohol-related falls. And while those numbers are increasing, you know, that doesn't seem to be the root of the issue. You know, the snow and ice is definitely a concern in the winter, but other states have snow and ice and don't have as many falls. Mm-hmm. So it's really it's a good question. We don't quite have the answer for yet, but we do know that, you know, as Wisconsinites are aging, and as more people are growing older, the snow and ice aren't going to go away, you know, and there are different measures that we can take in Wisconsin to address those factors. But it's not we don't have a fully clear picture on why we do have that highest rate of fall deaths.
Well, one thing I understand is we're doing well in Wisconsin is we're doing a pretty good job of data when it comes to falls as it comes to other states. What kind of efforts are we making to track this problem of falls and really understand the scope of the problem?
Yes. Yeah, so our EMS agencies report the ambulance runs that they go on to the state, and we're able to track the types of responses that they have, whether it's falls or something else, to understand health trends in Wisconsin. We also use this for performance improvement activities to help support our EMS agencies throughout the state. Additionally, our trauma hospitals, those that have a leveled trauma center, report some of their injury information to us as well. Again, we use that to help them understand the statewide trends, inform their injury prevention activities as we partner with, EMS, our trauma hospitals, and other organizations in Wisconsin, like the Wisconsin Institute for Healthy Aging, to prevent those fall injuries and other injuries as well.
We're learning about what's behind new data from the DHS about fall-related injuries. Suzanne Morley is with us, Health Promotion Program Coordinator at the Wisconsin Institute for Healthy Aging. And Will Kane is Preparedness and Emergency Healthcare Epidemiologist for the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Suzanne, when it comes to prevention efforts, when you look at these kind of statewide numbers that Will and his colleagues are collecting, what does it make you think as far as how best to direct prevention efforts here in the state?
Yeah, we try to take, you know, kind of like a multi-level approach to it, reaching the older adults themselves, reaching their family members and caregivers, reaching out to the EMS providers that are responding to lift assist calls and providing them with education on what they can do if they're meeting with someone that's falling, talking to healthcare providers, community organizations. There's many different layers to it, but providing that general awareness, you know, falls are common, but they're not a normal part of growing older, which is what we hear a lot from older adults, that they think that falls are kind of just inevitable as we age. But knowing that there's so many different things that we can do, you know, as individuals, as communities, and as systems to prevent those falls.
Will, I want to dig in a little more into your data. You also looked at the location of falls, home versus business and things like that. What do we learn from that?
Yeah, year over year, we see that most of the fall responses by EMS are to private residences. Nursing homes do make up a significant number of falls too, but really, a lot of our older adults who are falling and who are having injuries are falling at home. And so focusing on fall prevention in people's own homes where they live is a really important step towards fall prevention, reducing these fall injuries and keeping people healthy.
And Suzanne, that takes us into some of the work you do. When you work with people in Wisconsin, seniors, say, and their families, what are some of the first steps that people could take to make their homes more safe when it comes to falls?
Yeah, that's a big topic that we cover quite a bit in our Stepping On Falls Prevention program. And even on our Falls Free Wisconsin website, we have a interactive home safety challenge where you can go through a real Wisconsin home, identify some different hazards and some steps that you can take. But then it's also kind of looking at the way that you do things. Maybe you can slow down a little bit as you're walking throughout your home if you're not rushing. But then also doing things like installing grab bars, more lighting in your home, removing those slippery rugs and mats, you know, doing things differently at night if you're waking up to go to the bathroom, installing night lights, even taking a look at your medications if you have some different side effects that might be making you more dizzy or unstable.
Suzanne, something that I just thought about, are there steps we can take for when that fall happens? Maybe you've got a senior living at home to say, hey, I've fallen down and I need to reach out for help, or I want somebody to check in on me and I don't have a way to reach out to them. Because I know if we have that serious fall and then care is delayed, that makes it way worse.
Yeah, we definitely recommend older adults carry a cell phone with them. You know, even if you're just walking to the bathroom, even if you're just going outside just for a minute, you never know. We always hear those stories of individuals that have been laying on the floor for 10 plus hours before they're found, and we don't want that to happen whatsoever. So carrying a cell phone with you if you have one, getting some sort of medical alert button that you can maybe wear around your neck. So if a fall does happen, you are able to push that, or even having some sort of check-in process with either a neighbor or a family member. I've heard of older adults that, you know, if their neighbor doesn't open their drapes by a certain time, they go over and check on them, or maybe having a scheduled phone call or a text message every single day with someone so that you have that accountability, especially, you know, if you live alone. Having someone that you're accountable to and that's going to check in on you. And then even recommending that, you know, of course we want to prevent falls, but we recommend, you know, practicing how to get up from a fall. There's some resources on our website how to do that. And then making sure you have different things that you can hold on to, like I said, to hopefully prevent that fall from happening in the first place.
Suzanne, a couple things that have come up. You just mentioned medications, right? Maybe being a fall risk. Wisconsin is also known as a state that drinks a lot. Is this something that seniors are paying attention to? The fact that, hey, as we age, alcohol affects us differently. As we take new medications, that alcohol might affect us differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we hear quite a bit in our Stepping on Falls prevention program. And as we're out talking to older adults in communities, that they do have a lot of questions about their medications. We actually have a guest expert pharmacist come into the Stepping On program to share more about what different classes of medications can impact your fall risk. We have the older adult participants in that program write down a list of all of their medications, and not just those that are prescribed, but also the over-the-counter medications, the supplements, the whole gamut, because all of those things can interact.
And well, that makes me wonder, do we have data on the cause of falls, or is that data we can even collect? I don't know.
Yeah, unfortunately, with the way that we collect data, it can be really hard to tease out the cause of a fall. And each fall has a lot of different factors that can feed into it. That's why it's important for us to really approach fall prevention with that kind of multi-pronged approach that you're addressing many different things, those medications, the fall risks, the person's health to prevent those falls.
Suzanne, Will mentioned earlier that, okay, in some cases that person has that fall, EMS comes and they go to the emergency room, and maybe there they get some information about fall prevention. How do you do outreach to people who don't end up there? Maybe they have less serious falls, or they're at risk for falls but haven't had a major one yet. How do you get the word out outside of that healthcare setting?
Yeah, that's a great question, and something that our Falls Free Wisconsin Coalition has actually been digging into quite a bit lately. But if they're not being seen or sharing with their provider about their, you know, history of falls or fear of falling, well, there's a lot of great community-based organizations throughout the state. One place that I would recommend starting with is your Aging and Disability Resource Center, or ADRC. Oftentimes, they are hosting falls prevention programs like Stepping On. They're doing Falls Prevention Awareness Month events. They have exercise and fitness classes. So they're a really great community resource and available throughout the state.
Suzanne, I know a lot of senior living facilities and senior centers do things like balance training, balance classes for seniors. Is that something that can really make a difference when it comes to preventing falls?
Definitely. Definitely. The balance and strength component of it is super important, just as the home safety modifications, the medication management, all of those sorts of things. But, you know, it's really kind of amazing to see when we're working with older adults that are taking our 7-week Stepping On program. We practice balance and strength exercises every week. And by week 3, even sometimes week 2, people are noticing that improvement in their balance by practicing just a few simple balance exercises and strength exercises every other day. So that piece is really important. And like I said, there's simple exercises that you can do. You don't have to go out and go to a gym or a fitness class, though, you know, sometimes that makes it a little bit more fun. But really making that effort to do some simple exercises for your balance and strength makes a huge improvement. And it's really amazing to see when we're working with older adults.
Will, you're an epidemiologist. You're working with this data. You're not collecting these numbers just for the heck of it. You're hoping, I assume, to move the needle here. What are your hopes for what people, providers around Wisconsin can take your data and then do with it to prevent falls for people's health and to take some of this load off of EMS services?
Yeah, I think that this will hopefully encourage a lot of our providers to talk to older adults about falls. Even before they're at risk for falling, getting started on these things early, making sure that you're tracking people's medications, that they're having enough physical activity in their lives are all things that they can do before the first fall occurs to prevent that fall from ever happening. Additionally, I think that this could help encourage some of our community organizations and other folks to partner with EMS agencies to help EMS reach out to these individuals who do have falls to link them up with fall prevention services.
And Suzanne, wrap up for us, please, with some practical advice to maybe that person who says, I'm getting worried. I'm at a stage where I'm worried about a serious fall and injuring myself, or a loved one in that situation. Give us, please, a checklist of things that they can do right now to reduce that risk.
Yeah, first things first, I would recommend talking with a healthcare provider, even just having a conversation with a family member or friend. Hey, I'm worried about this. I've heard that this can happen as we age. Just making that initial step on having that conversation is super important. You know, a lot of people don't want to talk about falling. They're scared that they might lose their independence. But that's the whole point of this, really, is so that older adults can stay independent. So having a conversation with a healthcare provider, getting those medications checked with your pharmacist, joining a physical activity or a fitness class at a community center, or practicing some simple balance and strength exercises at home, getting your vision checked even at least annually. There's lots of vision-related changes as we age. And making some of those home safety modifications, like removing throw rugs, adding in grab bars, improving lighting. That's kind of where I would start. And you'll definitely see improvement from there. Increased confidence and, you know, even increased connectedness with community organizations.
We'll leave it there. Suzanne, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Will, thanks for being with us.
Yes, thanks for having me.
That was Suzanne Morley, Health Promotion Program Coordinator at the Wisconsin Institute for Healthy Aging, and William Kane, Preparedness and Emergency Healthcare Epidemiologist for the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. We've been talking about a new state report on the impact of falling for seniors in Wisconsin and the EMS system and how to prevent dangerous falls in the future.
Coming up, Wisconsin-raised author and body acceptance advocate Katie Storino shares her new novel and the ups and downs of clothing design for women who wear larger sizes.
There was a time, and it was magical, that designers cared, or at least pretended to care, about having body diversity in their ad campaigns, extending their sizes. That has reversed.
That's next on WPR News.
You're listening to Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Whitefish Bay native Katie Storino says she wears a plus size and is proud of it.
As an online influencer and body acceptance advocate, she works toward pushing brands to make bigger sizes. To apply pressure, she often shops major retailers, tries on clothes that are too small, even in the largest size on offer, and then posts it online.
She's got hundreds of thousands of followers on Instagram and has been featured in the New York Times, Today, and Oprah's The Shift. And she founded a beauty product line called Mega Babe.
Now the Wisconsin native and UW-Madison graduate is a novelist. Her debut novel, Sunny Side Up, includes a successful plus-size protagonist. Katie, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start where we meet your main character, Sunny, facing an experience that you have had in your own life, a lot of women can relate to, in a dressing room, trying the largest available size of this bathing suit she's looking at. Set the scene for us.
Yes, I think that most people can relate to that moment where you're in a fitting room and maybe you've put on some weight, or maybe you try on a size that you think you are and it's too small. And it causes a total existential meltdown. You are like, what happened? Like, why don't I fit in? And it's just a massive, meltdown that I think so many people have experienced. So I wanted to bring people into this book in a relatable way. And Sunny she's 35. She's newly divorced. She's gained weight, and she is trying to shop for a divorcation. and is unable to find a swimsuit that fits her body.
A divorcation. I love that word.
Yes, a divorcation is not something I officially made up, but it is. Usually it means that two divorced parents go on vacation together. But in this case, I meant for it to mean that you go and you celebrate your divorce.
Now, we feel bad, I think, for Sunny in this instance. But
yes.
I think, are very careful to make Sunny not a victim character, not somebody we just feel sorry for. She's a powerful character.
Yes. I think that that's another reason I wanted to write the book in the first place, because I think that so many women go through these traumatic experiences and are unable to recover. And I wanted to show a character that went through some really hard stuff emotionally, but she's resilient. And we see that in her dating life. We see that in her business life. I think that it's important to show a character can be resilient, especially at any size.
You experienced this with the bathing suit and other clothing yourself. A lot of people have. You didn't just think, wow, somebody should do something about this. Stores should carry bigger sizes. Manufacturers should make bigger sizes. You, in your social media work and elsewhere, really took the lead on this issue. What motivated you?
It's that moment in the book that we talk about. It's the moment where you start to question your self-worth because you don't fit into a piece of clothing. And I think that it's crazy that we allow that kind of thing to affect us, but it's understandable why it does, because it essentially gives you the message that you're not welcome here. You're not normal. You're not average. You can't fit into these things that so many other people can fit into. So it's really about the clothing sizing affecting your self-image in such a negative way. So I wanted to ground people back in reality and show them that, okay, these are just like clothing brands. This is just fabric. And by the way, stores and designers, you think you're dressing so many different people, but in my own body acceptance work online, I like to show the stores how far away they are from fitting on my body when the largest thing in their store. And I think it's funny for people to see, because it's oftentimes like a shirt that doesn't fit or a dress that I can't get over my head. But I think that those moments are relatable, and they're also an educational moment for the brand to say, whoa, wait, I thought we could make clothes for this girl. I didn't know. So I think it's a good way to raise attention about the issue.
You don't just say, hey, we can have clothing that's large enough to fit everybody. You'll say we can have interesting clothing, fashionable clothing, good-looking clothing that can fit everybody. Yeah. And you've done some work, yeah, you know, showing, hey, this celebrity's wearing this. You do these changes, it can work for somebody bigger than whoever that celebrity is. Why was that an important part of this for you?
I do something called supersize the look, mm-hmm, which is what you're referring to. I dress, I'm a size 18, and I wear the same outfit, essentially the same energy of the outfit, because I can't find those clothes in my size. But I do the same energy of the outfit to show someone who says, I love Reese Witherspoon's style, but I couldn't dress like her because XYZ, whatever negative thought you have about yourself in your head. And I like to show them that actually, look, no, I look great in an 18, and she looks great at her size, and you also, whatever size you are, can pull off this style as well.
I want to bring Wisconsin into this. You're from Wisconsin, so is Sunny, your main character.
Yes.
And there's this moment in the book where her business partner and otherwise partner for a little while in the book says something like, hey, we don't need to sell these large size swimsuits in New York. There aren't plus size people in New York. Where you're from, Wisconsin, of course, everybody there, uh-huh, is plus size. Uh-huh. No, but uh-huh, seriously, you went from Wisconsin to New York. Is there something different about being plus size, shopping plus size between here and there?
Yes. I think when I moved to New York, actually 23 years ago, I was shocked at how small everyone was and the lack of body diversity. And I was just kind of not normal size. I was definitely taller and bigger than a lot of people, but it's Wisconsin. I was on the crew team. Like there were people that I could find that were my size. And I remember being in so many situations. I was a nanny when I first moved here for about a year. And the grandmother of the child looked at me and said, "Oh, I didn't expect you to be so big." And I think I got so many comments like that, especially when I first moved here, that were that like really made me feel like, whoa, what's wrong with me and what is this world?
We're talking to Katie Storino, body positivity advocate, out with a new novel called Sunny Side Up. I want to go back into the novel now, Katie. You know, people might be listening to the questions I'm asking and thinking, oh, this is a book that's all about body positivity. I don't want to leave that there because there's a romance element. There's a lot of, you know, who's Sunny going to end up with? Tell us a little bit about the story outside of what we've been talking about so far.
Yes, I think there is some good messaging in the book, but I really wanted to write a fun book, something that is taking some of these more serious topics and making you laugh. And also, Sunny's in a love triangle. Sunny is about to start a new business. Sunny is figuring out what it's like to date after like 10 years of being with someone. So I think that there's a lot of funny and relatable moments in the book. And it's interesting because she ends up really kind of with these two guys are really, you don't know which one she's going to pick. And people are surprised at the end. So I'm going to leave that tease.
I won't spoil it. But another relationship I liked was Sunny's relationship with her friends. She meets new best friends post-divorce. And they're a huge part of her life.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's also something I wanted to bring into it. During the lowest parts of my life, my female friends have always been the ones who have, you know, picked me up and helped me through. And I think that it's just beautiful to see friendships like that in fiction. I mean, I'm still friends with so many of the women that I went to college with at Wisconsin. And I have such a high regard for those relationships that are often I can't think of the word I'm looking for. They're not emphasized as much as romantic relationships.
Right.
But I think that they're so important for a healthy life.
One of the more awkward relationships in the book, for me to read anyway, was when Sunny calls home to mom and dad. And mom in particular offers, you know, helpful advice. Well, we didn't put chocolates in your Valentine's Day care package because, you know, the weight or diet advice. And I'm sure this is something that happens a lot in the world. I know well-meaning people have well-meaning commentary that is really not all that helpful. How can we break that?
Oh, I think that's exactly it. It's well-meaning, but it's harmful. And I think you could just take that well-meaning energy and channel it into something completely unrelated from someone's physical appearance. If you're trying to pay someone a compliment, shifting more towards like, wow, like you're glowing. Like I can feel, you know, I can feel like how happy you are. Or just like, I love being with you. Like you always make me laugh. I mean, I think there are just so many other ways. As a society, we're really trained to engage on the physical right away, especially women. Have you lost weight? You must have lost weight. You look great. You know, this is like a normal social interaction that we have. But I think it's actually quite harmful. And there's a purpose to it. It makes sure that we as women continue to focus on our physical appearance first rather than finding our power or really ways that we can make change outside of our physical appearance. If we're always focused on that one thing, we're not looking at what else we're not focused on.
And you've done a lot of outreach to the fashion design world, some, I think, fairly polite naming and shaming. Are you getting responses? Are you seeing manufacturers and retailers saying, yes, we're going to make our lines in larger sizes, and yes, they will be in the store, not look on the website?
I've been doing this for about 10 years, and I would say up through like 2021, things were really shifting and moving And things have stopped moving in that direction, probably around 2022. There was a time, and it was magical, that designers cared, or at least pretended to care, about having body diversity in their ad campaigns, extending their sizes, bringing things in store. That has reversed, and I am kind of at a, quite honestly, a reset point to try to understand a new way into this conversation that people are now allowing themselves to tune out of.
Why do you think that has reversed? Was it just people saw it maybe as a passing fad or something? What changed?
Yeah, I would say that there is definitely there's a trend element, and that happens. And in the trend cycle, like it was cool to be curvy for a while, and now the body trend is in theory back to a thin body trend. But I thought we were making progress in the fact that we're not trends, we're people, and we need clothes that fit our body. We're not trying to fit into clothes. I thought we were really moving in a positive direction, and I think you could feel that in the collective. You could feel that, and that has shifted.
Part of your work has been on fashion lines and things like that. You've written a nonfiction book of advice, and a lot of your work on social media aims at helping people deal with their own body image. And you demonstrate some of that with Sunny in the novel.
Yes.
What is your message to people to have their weight not occupy so much of that bandwidth in their brains in such a negative way?
That's exactly the message. That's it. It's just, we have one life. And I don't know if you want to spend it looking in the mirror and hating what you see. So we can make changes today in the body that you're in. Because I guarantee if you do the work to accept yourself and to kind of move more into a neutral space about your body, it's not high highs and low lows. You're just kind of like, I got legs. All right, let's move on. I think that you are in a more stable place with your self-image versus if you don't do that work and then you lose a bunch of weight, those self-doubts still live in your brain. They will just transfer to other parts of your body or your appearance, essentially. And I've seen that over and over and over again. Katie, why don't I feel right? I lost that weight I've been trying to lose. Why don't I like what I see in the mirror? And it's because you still have those negative thoughts. It's really not about the size in your pants. It's about the way that you feel about yourself. And that doesn't mean your body can't change. It just means that you have to do that work before you can get to a place of acceptance, because your body's going to change your whole life.
Katie, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Katie Storino is an entrepreneur, author, and body acceptance advocate originally from Whitefish Bay. She founded a beauty product line called Mega Babe. Her debut novel that we've been talking about, it's called Sunny Side Up.
Coming up tomorrow on the show, preview a new documentary about Packers fans from Japan and find out why they adopted a team on the other side of the globe.
And we're wondering, for people here in Wisconsin, have you done something like this? Become a fan of a team in another state or another country? For example, a lot of Americans have adopted soccer teams in the English Premier League.
Tell us about it. What team did you latch onto and why? How did you decide which team or which sport to follow?
Email us at wisconsintoday@wpr.org, or you can call or text at 888-642-0232. That's 888-642-0232.
Wisconsin Today producers include Beatrice Lawrence, Avery Lee Rogers, and Mackenzie Crummy.
Our technical directors are Sarah Hopeful and Brad Kohlberg. Learn more about us at wpr.org/Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Thanks for listening to WPR News.